You're listening to Stateside. I'm Lester Graham in for Cynthia Canty. Michigan became a state after Native tribes ceded tens of millions of acres of land to the U.S. in a series of treaties. Those treaties said tribes kept their rights to hunt, fish, and gather on that land. But the state of Michigan didn't honor those rights until the 1970s. And once it did, there was an ugly backlash. Native Americans were threatened and harassed. Their fishing boats and nets were vandalized. Things have calmed down since then, but racism and harassment still keep some tribal citizens from practicing their treaty rights. Here to talk about that and one of the landmark cases that helped change things are Catherine Tierney. She's an attorney for the Bay Mills tribe who argued a case in court, and Jacques LeBlanc, commercial fisherman from the Bay Mills Indian community. He's the grandson of Big Abe LeBlanc. Is that right?
That is correct.
Yeah, they called him Big Abe, whose arrest led to that court case. So, Catherine, in the 1970s, tribal members around the Great Lakes were being threatened and assaulted by white fishers and hunters. What was the dispute?
The dispute was that tribal fishers wanted to use gill nets, which would be declared illegal gear by the state of Michigan. They were calling them lethal, non-selective devices, meaning that they were taking fish that otherwise would be available for sports fishing to harvest. And that meant that Indian fishers were seen as the bad guys, so that if you didn't get your bag limit one day on the lake, it must have been because Indian fishermen were taking the fish that you otherwise would have been able to harvest. It set up confrontations on the beaches, on the landings. People had to have their vehicles protected by somebody so that folks were not putting sugar in the gas tank or deflating the tires, or nets were being torn up. It was, in general, a very uncomfortable situation for the folks who were trying to fish for a living to be in.
Right. I remember reading a story about a tribe in Wisconsin where it actually came down to assault and things like that. How long had this conflict been going on by that point?
Well, by the time A.B. LeBlanc was cited by the state, people were sneaking fishing, you know, putting their nets in the dark, lifting them in the dark, so that they would not be, number one, discovered by Michigan DNR officers, and number two, not the subject of self-help enforcement by others who weren't happy about it. It wasn't until the Michigan Court of Appeals decision in October of 1974, where the court said that the right under treaty was preserved and still existed and could be exercised, that you had at least some legal protection for the exercise of the right, but that still meant that you had to deal with folks who didn't like it and would try to make your situation uncomfortable, and perhaps you wouldn't come back to that area to fish.
Well, let's talk about that case. Jacques, what was your grandfather doing that got him arrested?
He went and set gill nets in front of the state DNR.
Right in front of him, and they saw him?
Yes.
So
he called him up.
Well, he was asked to be a test case. Catherine, did you ask him to be the test case?
No, his community wanted to have a test case, and he volunteered.
So I take it he did it enthusiastically if he had called up the DNR to be there to watch it, right?
Well, how else was he going to guarantee getting a ticket?
So, Catherine, give us a little legal history here, because this ended up being the second of three big cases regarding treaty rights. Give us a little context, historic context, about what was happening in the courts at that time.
Well, there were several cases going back to the early 1900s regarding treaty rights to fish in the Pacific Northwest that were held by the U.S. Supreme Court to continue to exist, even though a lot of time had elapsed from when they were signed. And that was something that members of the Bay Mills Indian community took to heart, especially since in the 60s, the state decided that the future of the use of the water lay on the sports and tourism side of the equation rather than continuing commercial fishing, so that there was a concerted effort to reduce the number of fishing vessels and the number of licenses the state would issue, and to eliminate the use of gill nets as a commercial fishing gear. Now, that was something that was a type of gear that had been used by tribal fishers back to the time of Christ. You know, there are archaeology digs that have been found that, for example, in the Mackinac Straits area so that it's not something that, you know, was new. But by making that restriction, it would be impossible for individual fishers, you know, to be able to take out a smaller boat, set their nets, lift them, and bring the catch to shore. So that there was a concerted effort to try and put tribal fishers out of business. And they fought back using their treaty.
Now, Jacques, a lot of people would say, well, your grandfather was poaching. But as I understand it, he wasn't poaching. He was actually following the rules set out by the tribe. It's a sovereign state, right? So why didn't Michigan recognize that he had that right under the treaty that Catherine was just talking about?
Well, nobody had ever challenged the state prior to that. And that was what we decided as a community that we wanted to do, to uphold these rights. And ironically, here we are some 40 years later, and we're still asking permission from the state to exercise a lot of our rights given by those very same treaties.
Now, this was about conservation, DNR rules about conservation. Your tribe has its own conservation rules. Is this just a matter of white people kind of envying the fact that Native people have different rules that allow them to fish when white folks can't?
Ultimately, yeah. A lot of white people feel as though Native people are getting a way bigger piece of the pie than they are. And they feel as though they deserve an equal piece of the pie. But what most people seem to forget is that this was originally our pie. And we signed for these rights when we gave this land up.
This case, People versus LaPlaw, ended up in the Michigan Supreme Court. Catherine, how had the lower courts viewed the case at that point?
Well, the local courts, meaning the district and circuit court, upheld a conviction of Mr. LaPlaw for fishing with illegal gear, which would have been the gillnet. The Michigan Court of Appeals reversed that conviction, saying that the right to fish was reserved in the 1836 treaty and that there needed to be a determination made as to whether or not that specific regulation that the state sought to enforce was necessary for conservation of the fishery resource. But before it could be remanded, the state appealed to the Michigan Supreme Court, which ultimately held that the right continued to exist as well. So what we're talking about is whether or not the state of Michigan, under any circumstance anybody could think of, would have the right to regulate treaty fishing activities under this treaty. And the answer, at least from the Michigan Supreme Court, was it could if its regulation did not discriminate against Indian people and a ban on gillnetting was perceived to be such a discrimination, and that conservation goals could not be met solely by regulating the white part of the fishery. And so ultimately that case became a guideline, but when the case also proceeded on a different track in federal court, the court there ruled that the tribe's regulations would apply to this activity to the exclusion of the state if the regulations were effective to protect the resource. And that's the rule that we've been following since that decision was reached in 1979.
In Kay LaFon's story, we heard that Native Americans are still getting hassle from white people about fishing and hunting rights. Is it a matter of Joe Average doesn't have an understanding of treaty rights, or is it going back to what Jacques said earlier, they're just angry because there's different rules?
I think it's a combination of both. But remember, too, we have seen that affirmative action, per se, has been rejected either by referendum or by court decision in a lot of circumstances, and people seem to lump treaty rights in the same category as affirmative action, i.e. that one group of people are getting something that they don't deserve.
You've got a treaty for it. It's in law.
Exactly. Yeah. Right. And the treaties are the supreme law of the land along with the laws of the United States. And the case that I was talking about in federal court was brought against the state of Michigan by the United States. So it isn't as though people have a valid concern, you know, that if they could just bring it up to a sympathetic court would be ruling in their favor. Treaty rights are there because of, as Jacques said, the fact that those were conditions that were set by the tribes in order to sell their lands to the United States. One thing that Lester mentioned was the situation in Wisconsin, and I was the lead attorney for the tribes in that case for 10 years and came back to Michigan But we all learn something from that, which is how, you know, if a state just signs off on court decisions and doesn't do anything proactive, you're going to have a huge backlash that really is dangerous to tribal members and their supporters and law enforcement personnel, because most of the people who were hurt in Wisconsin were law enforcement. So that when we negotiated a separate agreement by which inland rights to hunt, fish, and gather were going to be exercised in this state, the Michigan DNR and Attorney General's Office did a dog and pony show in various parts of the state to explain the decree and to be sure that there wasn't going to be a lot of backlash and people reacting angrily and violently to people who are exercising rights guaranteed by treaty. So I think that Michigan does deserve credit for making sure that the Wisconsin situation did not recur here.
Jocks, I got one last question. Do you feel safe when you go out fishing?
I do feel safe. There is definitely some conflict, and I think it relates both to what you were asking earlier, a lot of misunderstanding. And then there's just some racism out there. And where that derives from, I don't know. We have experienced some notes left on our trucks, some damage to our fishing gear on the ice, some things written in like the dust of the windows, and go away Indians, stop raping the lakes, stop catching all of the fish, save some fish for us, stuff like that. Fishing is a big part of our community, the Bay Mills Indian community. I am a third generation fisherman. And I'm just very proud to carry on traditions, especially the ones that my grandfather fought for.
Jocks LeBlanc is a commercial fisherman from the Bay Mills Indian community. Catherine Tierney is an attorney for the Bay Mills tribe. Thanks very much, both of you, about telling us about the hunting and fishing rights for Native Americans under the treaty that has been upheld and, you know, the bitter feelings that some white fishers and hunters have about those rights.
Thank you for having me.
It was an honor. Thank you.